I want to discuss how to match OPEs in the chiral algebra and in the holographic dual geometry. I didn't take good notes because we'll probably need to include part of the discussion in the review part of the paper. So let me remind you of a few of the things we said, right? There are a bunch of fields, X's, Y's, B's, and C's. They have OPEs. And I put an H bar in there to help me with counting loops. And they're matrices, right? So here really there was some ij, kt in this cis, and there's something like delta it, delta kj, okay? Which can be represented using, so that I can represent with contractions by double, in a double line notation. And there are operators, and I was discussing, yes, last time, there were, you know, there are two conventions of an autonomized operators. Last time I used a convention, so for fun today I use the different convention. So that's a bunch of operators, which are what? Well, they are traces of a sequence of symbols. So let me denote all of this, something like that, some symbols. So there are traces of some sequence of symbols. Perhaps with some derivatives, and then with some, and taking some linear combinations of those. Let's call it F. I need a good name for an operator. Well, call it. I'll call it F, not a great name. Maybe D? A? Anyway, D. I had some coefficients. A1, KN, AN. And I'll take some linear combination. And I want this linear combination to be BRST closed, modulo BRST exact. Okay, you might ask which linear combinations are BRST closed. Okay, some of them are easy to write down. Some of the work might need a little bit more work. One that is easy to write down is symmetrized traces of X to the A, Y to the B. Right. We call it N and M. What does this word mean? It just means I'm ordering them in the trace in all possible ways. But I think perhaps, but in order to avoid confusion and introduce a convenient notation, let me define a field Z of U and little z, which is just X plus UY. Convenient way to put the two fields together and talk about them. And then I can do something like trace of Z of U to the N. Okay? And if you expand this out, by definition, this is going to be a sum over M of U to the M, so symmetrized trace of X to the N minus M. Y to the M. Is this clear? You can take this as a definition of your symmetrized trace.
That just comes from the binomial here?
I'm not even doing a binomial, just, when I compute this, at each point I have to decide to put an X or a Y. And then I'm going to sum over all possible ways to do so. So that's a good definition of a symmetrized trace. But yes, I could have put a binomial here. That would give me a different definition of the symmetrized trace. We can discuss which one is prettier. But it doesn't really matter because I can just work with this and whatever name you like to put here. It's up to you. OK. So when you use this field, then Z of U, Z of U prime, Z prime, goes like H bar U minus U prime over Z minus Z prime. OK?
Why don't we have to include derivatives?
Sorry?
Like, maybe I missed something, but in the first, you said, OK, we take a generic.
I didn't say these are all the things you can do. I'm saying, let me start by defining these ones. OK? Remember that the BRST transformation had a three-level and one loop part, OK? The three-level part sort of maps fields like this. Etc. The one loop part involves some weak contractions between trace of C, X, Y, and U operator. Say, its operator is made only of X's and Y's. Now, in particular, if the operator only has X's or only Y's, you cannot do two weak contractions. Furthermore, if it's gauge invariant and made out of X's only, not derivatives of x, then it's also a trace of x to the n is also invariant because this is a gauge transform, like a gauge transformation parameter g, c. So trace of x to the n is closed, but then this symmetry has an SU2. This theory has an SU2 symmetry which rotates x and y into each other. You can use it to transform X into Z by just rotating X to X plus a multiple of Y. Which does, so this implies that trace of Z U to the N is closed. Okay, essentially what's going on is that here there is an anti-symmetric combination of the two fields. And here, everything is symmetric somehow. But yeah, you could have written this as X commutator Z. It would have been fine. Anyway, doesn't matter. You see, by SL2 symmetry, this is true. You can try to figure out what else can you do without using derivatives. This takes a little bit more work. And it's susceptible, more susceptible to sort of one loop corrections. So if I ignore the one loop corrections, trace of B, Z of U, Z, B of Z to the N, well, let me not just write the Z's, to the N, is a good candidate. But is this really true? Well, at three level it works too. But even that, you could worry because this brings me a commutator of two things, right? So let me start by looking at trace of bx to the n. So the three level part would send it to trace of x commutator y, x to the n. But cyclic symmetry comes to rescue. This is actually zero. Because you can write it, so there is a yx or an xy, but the xy, in the xy you can bring x all the way to the side. And so this implies, so this is okay at tree level. At one loop, well, I need to do this calculation. So I can get a contraction with B and a contraction with Y. So this is definitely more dangerous. I can pick up both planar and non-planar terms. The planar terms involve two things which are just consecutive. So I get something like h bar n trace of dx x to the n. And there is also going to be a multi-trace thing. A sum of multi-trace things. So yeah, not so nice. This is the derivative of this. There are two terms, but I don't think that makes any difference for this calculation. Let's see, do they make difference? Maybe I'm confused here. I should be careful. I haven't done this calculation in a bit. I seem to remember that you need a bit more work to make this nice. I think it's actually possible that I'm making a mistake about this, that this cancels out. Sorry. I didn't want to talk about this operator anyway, so. But something like this does exist, but it might need corrections, I think, if you work beyond the planar approximation. I think the planar part must cancel. I should be more careful drawing these diagrams, I assume. So there is a lot of B. Right, x, sort of, and then we have now we have the c, y, x sort of term, and then minus c, x, y, write it as minus y, c, x, right? If I want to do planar contractions, I need to contract here and here. I think this will give me something similar with opposite sign. So I think the planar part is definitely zero. I'm not so sure about the non-planar one. I suspect the non-planar one might be non-trivial. So if you want to write down at finite n, finite h bar, you will have to probably add corrections, multi-trace corrections, something like that, and make sure that everything cancels. But the planar approximation where we're working, this is fine. So essentially here, what I was going to say is that I was going to do the same calculation here. And now I'm going to get a very similar diagram, but using the things a bit to the left. And then cyclic symmetry allows these two terms to cancel each other. If I did not have cyclic symmetry, they would not cancel. I'm raising this point because the next class of operators you might want to discuss. Doing this. The next class of operators that you might want to discuss is things which have a derivative of a field. Okay. When you do calculations involving these fields, because there is a derivative in one of the spots, using cyclic symmetry will be more suspicious. Okay. One operator that you can try to build is this. This is a nice operator. Why? Because, so let me look at, in particular, trace of dc, x to the n. So notice that when you look at the BRC transformations at tree level, dc goes to c dc. So it kind of behaves like one of the other letters at tree level. So at tree level, this is fine. I can work at one loop, definitely. But at one loop, because I have a c and an x, there is nothing in the BRC differential which can contract with this. Right? The BRC differential has BRC current has sort of schematically c, sort of BCC terms and CXY terms. So the one loop differential cannot do anything to this. There is nothing that has a B and a Y. Sorry, yeah, there is nothing that has a B and a Y. So these are good. And then you can wonder, can I do something with dx's? Well, dx x to the n is boring. This is already, it's just the derivative of trace of x to the n plus 1. So we already have it. Whenever we have a field, we have all these derivatives in operators. So when I write something like that, you can imagine putting any number of derivatives in front. Okay. But you might wonder if you can do something with trace of the y, x to the n. Okay. Well, at tree level, the only dangerous part is that the y transforms, has two terms. There is a c the y, but also the c y, just by Leibniz. So when I do the transformation of these, I might actually risk landing on something like that. This looks dangerously similar to something that I can find in here. But as you see here, sort of the y has been anti-symmetrized with things instead of symmetrized. So that is not, wait. Yes. So this is not exact. Or the, you know, the this is not an exact thing. But it's definitely true that you can shift it by exact things. You can totally shift it by the image of this. So there is a bit of a sort of a mixing, not exactly mixing. So it's like the fields that contain one derivative will not be able to say, ah, this is the canonical representative. Because we kind of always be able, always risk mixing it up with derivatives or something else. Of course, we can say, no, I want the primary field, something which is not the derivative of something else. That requires you to use the stress tensor, you know, asking for the OP of with the stress tensor to have a certain behavior, which doesn't play well with a planar limit. So I'm not saying that you cannot do this. You can definitely do it. But it's not very natural a requirement if you're studying things in the planar limit. But anyway, so the answer is that you can mix up, you can take linear combinations of the y, x to the n, and dx, y, x to the n somehow to make something be heuristic closed. It's just a little bit unpleasant to write down. Just because here there are three symbols, you need to figure out how to, you know, which order to write them in the trace, and so on. So I'm not going to be able to just, I'm not going to write for you a nice expression here. There is a way to do it. There's a cute trick introducing some superfields. So using the trick, you can definitely show that there is a natural candidate that is heuristically closed, which combines all of these. I think that would bring me away from the main topic of the discussion. Perhaps I can just mention how to do it and leave it as an exercise. Okay. Yes.
Can I just stop and ask just a technical question?
Yes.
So, when I remember you said before that whenever you write something raised to the m, you are always going to write it in terms of like a normal order product.
Yes.
And I think when I think of this as a normal order product, it's already symmetrized.
No.
Like the normal order product.
Trace of x, y, x, y. It's not symmetrized. It's a thing. Putting a normal order product is not going to change the order in the trace.
There are indices of matrices.
Oh, I see. Ah, I see.
They're matrices.
Oh, I see. Sorry.
Yes. So the trick I wanted to mention is that you can define a big superfield of some sort. Which is something like C plus theta 1 x plus theta 2 y plus theta 1 theta 2 b. But this theta 1 and theta 2 are fermionic, auxiliary fermionic variables. And you can define a differential which maps theta to the theta and z to the z. And you can convince yourself that the BRST transformation at three level, at least, of C is just the commutator of C and C. So the BRST transformation of dC by Leibniz rule is the commutator between C and dC. And as a consequence, trace of dC to the n is BRST closed. At three level. Still, it's going to have the trouble of one-loop stuff, but at three level at least, and even actually a planar level is BRST closed. At a tree plus planar. So all the arguments I was giving there with cyclic symmetry and all of that can be just transported to this calculation in superspace. And inside of here, you can find all of these things we're talking about and their derivatives, organized in a peculiar way. So
Why only planar?
Well, because as we saw already here, there are non-planar multi-trace pieces in the action of the differential. So in the paper with Kevin, this was called the AN, BN, CN, and DN towers. Okay, this contains the stress tensor and other things. This contains some supercurrents and other things. And this contains the currents for the SU2 rotations. And other things.
So this really looks like you are rewriting your 42 super-young meals in terms of like a supergroup. C is this thing valid in the supergroup.
The right way to think about it is that this is that I've packaged all my fields into a field valued in an algebra. the algebra. So my fields are matrices valued in an algebra, which is this. Yes. Which is just sort of, and this is sort of the natural thing for the volume theory of a brain valued in living in C3. Yes.
Two questions. These operators, B and C, are fermionic operators?
Yes.
Because they have the B.
Yes, see? Yeah.
And all these operators are, like, do they have ghost number zero? Or?
No. This is ghost number minus one. This is ghost number one. Do you feel bothered by having fields on non-trivial ghost number? Yes, it's a reasonable thing to be bothered about. It's actually somewhat unusual in this sort of gauged beta gamma systems. There is an even funnier thing, which is that there is actually a symmetry mixing these two, although they look completely different. I don't know if it's known that the symmetry holds beyond the planar level. I think it is. So it's a very deep, it's a mysterious symmetry. You can try to find reasons for it. At some point with Kevin, we were grasping at S-duality even, after the spiration, but actually, proving that this algebra has this SL2 symmetry, rotating this and this, would be nice. Yes.
So you cannot go between them with supersymmetry. You're not like supersymmetric.
No, this is an outer automorphism of the chiral algebra. So there are no currents for it. It's not a Katz-Moody symmetry. Is a global symmetry. In the chiral algebra, every symmetry which has currents is automatically promoted to a Katz-Moody symmetry. This isn't. And I'm still not even sure it's really something which has a physical meaning in the Fordinical for superior Mills, although we did try to say it has to do with its duality, but I'm not even sure if I believe that statement still. This chiral algebra can also be found at the boundary of some 3D Nical 4 theories, a 3D Nical 8 theory, the theory from two brains, actually. And there, this is an expected symmetry of the bulk theory, but which was somehow broken by the boundary condition. There's a 3D Nical 4, the 3D Nical 8 theory. It has SO7 asymmetry. It's supposed to get promoted to SO8 in infrared because it's a theory from two brains, just 8 transverse directions. There is a chiral algebra you can find at the boundary of this theory. There is no reason for the emergent infrared symmetry of the bulk theory to become a symmetry of this chiral algebra, but it's nice if it does. And it has to do with this symmetry enhancement, again, but very poorly understood. So I think it's definitely an open question. You know, is this hidden outer automorphism really there in the finite n cohomology? I don't know.
The 3D equals 8 is the world volume of what?
M two brains. But yeah, let's forget about that for now. Otherwise, going to go too far from the topic. So now remember this chiral algebra is the volume theory of the one brains that wrap some C, which sort of live at C0, 0 inside C3. When Kevin introduced the B model, I think. I will try not to use too much about it, but we'll see what we need. But just this fact, there is a transverse C, so this is sort of a C times C2. Okay? There are some brains which have one-dimensional holomorphic rod volume. This is the theory that lives on the brains. The fields X and Y literally describe the motion in this C2. B and C's are just ghosts for the gauge symmetry that lives on brains. Just the fact that in a one-dimensional holomorphic stuff, a gauge field can be just completely gauge fixed away, but it leaves behind some ghosts. Okay, so what does it mean that it's the volume theory of the brain, right? It means that it's coupled to the bulk theory in some way. So the bulk fields coupled to the D-brain and coupled to the movements of the D-brain. Okay? So in particular, if I turn on the an expectation value for the bulk fields, this expectation value will turn on some operators on the brain volume. Okay? So the action for the brain has the action we wrote for that, right? X trace, you know, 1 over h bar, trace of x del bar y plus b del bar c. And then there would be couplings to everything in the bulk. So there was some sort of bulk field and its derivatives. So derivatives of times operators which are single trace operators. And it's a beautiful fact, which is a universal property of string theory, really, that every single trace operator ends up coupled to something. So the coupling between the bulk and the brain involves all of the single trace operators. And conversely, pretty much all of the things you could imagine coupling the brain to, you know, all of the sort of derivatives of the fields evaluated at the location of the brain, will map, will have a corresponding operator. I could try to show this to you using a bit of string theory. But for now, I just want to say that the cohomology problem of writing expressions like that and computing Q0 of it turns out to be essentially identical to the problem of writing down couplings like that on the worksheet. So a coupling like that comes from a worksheet diagram that looks like this. There is some vertex operator for the bulk, okay, and a bunch of vertex operators for the boundary. So you need to do a calculation like that in string theory. You put this at the middle, you fix the location of one of these, and you integrate everybody else in an orderly way around the circle. Okay? And you can ask, what happens if I put something Q exact? here, I can sort of move the queue to the other things, and I get a sum of Q acting on stuff plus certain boundary terms. So if I put a Q here, I can move it here. But Q of an integrated operator, if you remember in string theory, is not zero. It's a total derivative. So if I put a Q here in the middle, this becomes an integral on a boundary of some moduli space for the disk of something with V and boundary things. So the boundaries mean come from situations where the boundary fields hit each other in some order. Okay? If you go through some gymnastics, you can recognize that somehow this calculation here is really identical to the calculation of asking when is this closed. So Q 0 of O of D can be written as an O of QD. Okay. And these D's, if you stare at them long enough, can be identified with expressions like that, with this differential. I'm making a long story very short, because it brings us out of the main analysis. But I just want to say that the fact that there is a canonical pairing here is really a general fact about worksheet theories. Not super deep. It just follows on the fact that we are studying string theory.
Should I think that fields like...
Well, it is deep.
That the fields X, Y coupled to derivatives of metric or like other fields there, like in a bulk.
Mm-hmm.
So derivatives correspond to like extra XY fields, because this is like deformation of the brain.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And okay.
Yeah, I will be more specific.
Okay.
But now just this is a general principle that holds in string theory. That you can find single trace operators on the brain which couple to all the things that it could be coupling to. I said not super deep. It is deep, it is super deep, but it's not mysterious. It's a feature that comes from the properties of disks and moduli spaces of points on disks. Okay? At the end. And it's what Kevin calls causal duality. So there is a natural universal pairing between fields near the brain and single trace operators on the brain. Mm-hmm.
This is in the large n limit.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. You are correct. So if I'm at finite n, the story will be, possibly a bit more complicated. I mean, it's still true that this is the coupling. This comes from disks, right? If I really want to write down the effective action on the brain, I would have to introduce more stuff coming from other surfaces, with genus. And also, I would have multi-trace things potentially, right? I could have a contribution from an annulus. And furthermore, the notion of trace and multi-trace is also not fully separate at finite n, right? So I might be able to write, once I have enough fields here, I can rewrite this as polynomials in the traces. It's still true that somehow the consistent couplings are consistent. But the form of the consistency will become much more complicated. Yes.
at finite end, can we make a statement about, can we make a statement that is analogous to that, where everything that can be coupled from the box side couples to not only single trace operators, but multi-trace operators as well?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. There is no reason for a single brain to be able to explore the full complexity of the fields in the neighborhood of the brain. Like, for a, suppose n equal to 1, right? Then all you can write is polynomials in x, y, and their derivatives. I don't think that's enough to describe all the possible couplings that you could have done, written down between a brain and the bulk. I don't think so. I would have to think more carefully.
I think I feel like I'm being very slow, but you're probably saying the most important thing about like this. This holographic dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, so Kevin said that BDS, like the two-cycle holography is the statement that states like response local operators on the brain is equivalent to like boundary conditions on the Baccarat geometry except at the point of the insertion. And
Now, Kozul duality is about finite n perturbative in one in perturbative in h bar.
Finite n.
Sorry, what I mean is Kozul duality is about Q0. Okay? Holography is about Q0 plus planar. Okay, this deforms the complex of single trace operators, and it deforms the geometry on the other side. You don't have the brain anymore, and instead you have just bulk fields interacting with each other in a Baccarat geometry. And I was gonna, that's what I was gonna hope to, so hoping to start describing.
So this is not back reacted yet, but they are like one-to-one to the...
Yes. So there is definitely a source. So besides all of this stuff, there is just n times some bulk field. So the charge of the brain. So here the back reaction is introduced perturbatively by this. Suppose that I want to study a correlation function in the world volume theory. A way to do so would be to just take the functional derivatives with respect of these bulk fields. Okay? In other words, if I add a bunch of if I add a bunch of infinitesimal deformations of the bulk okay, then the effect on the whole system would be to pull down some of these operators. So if I call this just beta I, well, okay. So I should be able to convert into correlation function of some single trace operators.
Should I think that this expression is written before back reaction or after back reaction?
I don't. Before.
Before, okay.
Yes.
This, but
otherwise, there is no brain, so.
Yeah, therefore,
yes.
I'm asking. But still, n is infinite or finite? In this, if you write this.
It's a symbol. I don't know.
Okay.
Tuft expansion is just about expanding in different ways, distinguishes symbols n and h bar.
Mm-hmm.
N could be large, but h bar n is still small, infinitesimal.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying, it doesn't really matter. I would like to sort of understand how to compute the OPE or to compare the OPE on the worksheet, on the target space, on the word volume theory of the brain, with some calculation in the bulk. So, and the idea is that somehow, if I just add sort of an infinitesimal deformation of the bulk fields, okay, this will correspond to sort of insert some kind of an integral of beta 1. It's not exactly the same, okay? Some function trace of. I'll be more specific, hopefully. Okay? So there are, maybe I should be a bit more specific, right? So what sort of, I want to understand how to sort of pull down a single operator, a specific operator by deforming the bulk infinitesimally. What are the possible infinitesimal deformations that could create an operator at a specific point? Well, or perhaps with a specific profile, F. A specific form. Well, I have the geometry which has a C squared and a C. Let me call the coordinates here Z, and for future proofing, I'll call the other ones A and B. Okay? And if you remember, I can describe fields either as forms or as polyvector fields. Don't know which one feels more comfortable to you. Polyvector fields make it easier to do brackets. Forms are sometimes more intuitive. Let me do polyvector fields. So let me try to write a polyvector field which could be talking to the brain in some way. I'm going to put some specific, so I want to put some polynomial in A and B. Well, let me say something like that first. Let me just say that. Okay, I want to say properly. I want to do this. I want to take some polyvector field in C2. And I'm just going to multiply it with a delta function. OK? It should be clear that this will couple to an operator at location W. OK? Now, which how should this look like? Well, what are the possible vector field, polyvector fields in C2 that I could be writing down? Well, I still want this to have divergence 0. There is no vector field component in the z direction, so the divergence only affects calculation here. So I want the divergence or in C2 of beta C2 to be 0. a simple way to do that is actually write beta CQ as the divergence as the sort of the of something. It's something like the B P the A minus the P the B. Something like that. Okay, so I compute the divergence, I get the A the B the B P minus the A the B P. That's one thing I could do. What else could I do? I could probably, so this is a nice one, because it has one form degree, but also this is like a Beltrami differential. It's a vector field valued in one forms. Something that gives you deformation of the geometry. And so it's natural to imagine that this deformation of the geometry will pair up with deformations of the shape. Okay? So it's not crazy to tell you, as we are short of time, that this sort of pairs up, inserts an operator trace of P of X, so trace of P of X and Y at W. So deforming the background by this amount, infinitesimally, will pull down this. It will insert this on the brain. Good. Now we could try to figure out what are other things. The thing that has a B in here, for example, is supposed to have a lower Gauss number. I think it's just a function. I can just take a function is a divergence-free vector field. And this gives me, I claim, symmetric trace of B, B of X and Y. You could argue this is the case or not, but you know, Gauss number kind of works. I'm happy. I could try to put something which has a day A and a day B, but it will be never be divergence-free. So I'm done. Well, that gave me the B in 8 hours. What about the C and D towers? Well, I could try to also have something on the form sort of B1 tensor derivative, tensor delta function. But put a Z here. Now, this is not divergence free because I get a term with the derivative of the delta function if I compute the divergence. Divergence just takes the thing and puts it in front of the thing in front. So I need to correct that by something with d delta 2 of z minus w d z bar and beta 2 c 2. Okay. But now the divergence free means that d of this equals this pretty much. So I can fix this by putting a d here and I'm done. It's another nice solution which reaches in and pulls the brain in some way. And it's still a Beltrami, this is still Beltrami differential, this could still be a Beltrami differential if I take beta to be a polynomial. So this is still a kind of a change in the shape of the brain, but it changes it sort of moves the brain parallel to itself. Okay, it's like a diffeomorphism on the brain. And so it actually involves the stress tensor on the brain and its relatives. So this will give you the sort of D tower. You know, something like x, y, sorry, you know, x, the y plus, well, anyway, I just call it D and M. And now you could also take beta C2 to be a day of something. Okay, in which case this would drop off, drop out, and you just get that. Day of a polynomial. And I think this corresponds to the C tower. Double check this. I might be making a mistake. Now notice that this tower sort of mix up a little bit in the sense that if I take a derivative of this, it will land in here. But with a beta whose del bar is the whose del is zero, so it doesn't have this term. Okay? This mixing is completely analogous to the things I was mumbling about the fact that when I look at the BRST transformations for these, it's kind of difficult to distinguish them at a planar level from derivatives of the other tower. So it's exactly the same phenomenon. Which again, it's deep but not mysterious. It all has to do with this causal duality pairing. You know, whatever I have here must pair nicely with the operators I have. Okay. Good. So,
can I still ask you a question?
Yes.
I'm trying to understand. So, when that Kevin was talking about these, he kind of still told us, like, hey, there, I can write down these operators at n equal to infinity limit, and
yes.
I can show you that there is these corresponding kind of solutions to the Bok geometry
yes.
that has this specific singularity. You just said, okay, like there is this match.
No, here is before Bok reaction. Here I have not Bok reacted.
Yeah.
But what's going to happen, right, is that this behavior is going to become the behavior near the boundary. But we'll get.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like at that time, I felt like I just got a sense that that's just kind of miraculously there is these things that match up. But you're saying this matchup really is because there is this.
Yeah, before Bok reaction. So these are expressions I've written down in the un-Bok reacted geometry. They would have to be corrected to make sense in the Bok reacted geometry. But the correction will sort of not change the way they behave near infinity, very, very far away from the brain, and correct them as they come in. So effectively, this kind of becomes boundary conditions for the modifications of the background, which will be asking a specific question in the quantum field theory. But anyway, right. So just to reiterate, if I take my background with the brain and I turn on one of these or a collection of these at different points, it forces the volume theory of the brain to have some correlation function, okay? And if there was no brain, I could turn on these pretty much pretty freely at different points. I would have no effect. So in a sense, the brain is giving me all the interesting stuff in the answer, all the interesting part of the answer. Right. And then as we include Bok reaction, this will become the statement that deforming the Bok reacted geometry by something that looks like that computes the correlation functions of the theory.
But is it true that in principle I can derive these couplings just by writing like some work volume action together with brain action, like Born-infield action, or I don't know what's brain action.
No, the volume action is the brain action.
Okay, and then like I just modify it a bit, and I look how the deformations of brain react to modifications of background fields.
I mean, you can just say, okay, let me write the beta gauge beta gamma system coupled to a generic Beltrami differential, field dependent Beltrami differential,
okay.
And you'll get that. So I'm going to write the action for a brain, which is generic shape, parametrized infinitesimally by these
yes.
fields.
Yes. Ah, okay. Yes.
Yes. So you know, the action for the brain is something like the integral of the inverse of alpha, where alpha is the beta with the indices lowered.
Mm-hmm.
So you just take these evaluated at the location of the brain.
Yes.
And you should be able to get that.
Do they have expansion? In
yes.
That's
yes, that's right. Yeah, we're running a bit late. I wanted to do a tiny, I wanted to get to the final state, to the punchline. So if you can give me another 5 minutes. So I want to reconstruct the OPE at the leading order in perturbation in the planar expansion from this. And I want to use the following way to think about it. Suppose I'm in the quantum field theory, and I put an operator at W. And then I try to define another operator in the neighborhood of W. I want a definition which allows me to integrate this operator around, including over the location of the first one. Okay. If I just insert O2 at W prime and average it, I'm going to have troubles because this is singular. So I need to correct this. Right? The way to correct this is to say, OK, I describe the insertion of two operators in the regularized insertion just by subtracting the OPE. So I could say the regularized, so O1 of W, O2 of W prime, regularized, it's just O1 of W, sorry, I'm going to put it the other way, O2 of W prime, O1 of W. I take just O2 of W prime, O1 of W, and then systematically subtract the OPE, the singular part of the OPE, which, if you remember, in the chiral algebra was H bar over W prime minus W. And then there's going to be some, okay, evaluated at W. And, you know, subtract farther until I get something regular. Okay, this is a sort of thing which I could do then, do calculations which, like, let me use this to deform the theory. Essentially, what I'm trying to say is that if I try to define the deformation, a deformation of a theory by O2 in the presence of O1, I had to effectively change O1 by adding other things. This is just a renormalization of operators. Right? I have an operator in the bare theory, I deform the theory. I need to just add counter terms to my operator to make sure that the deformation is well defined. This is what I would like to mimic on the other side. So on the other side, I'm going to say, OK, I have a background which has this sort of, I don't know, yeah, beta 1 on C2, delta of Z minus W, the Z bar. Okay? And I want to try to, but I want to see, is this still okay if I also deform the theory by O2, deform the background infinitesimally? So what if I add, I already had a beta C2 with some function of Z, okay, representing the smeared operator 2. So in a sense, I'm trying to understand, how does this solution be, you know, is this still a good solution if I change the background a bit in a way that would have deformed the chiral algebra by the integral of F or 2? Well, no, it's not, because the equation of motion is that del bar beta plus beta beta is 0. Working at this order, you know, if I've added this deformation, in particular at the linearized order, the equation for this new deformation changes. I want del bar beta 1 somehow plus beta 2, beta 1, equal to 0. For example, if this was a deformation of the geometry or the complex structure, this is just telling me that my new deform, my beta one I'm adding should be something like this, but which is holomorphic in the new complex structure. Okay? So, well, let's try to solve this with something with using this ansatz still. I get the del bar in C2 of beta 1 C2 plus beta 2 in C2. Let me now, for simplicity, assume that beta 1 was of this form, okay? I don't want to worry about this yet. This will be a bit more complicated, but you can do it, beta 1. So that I don't have to worry about beta 1 acting on F. I can do it, it's not a problem, but for simplicity, let's not do that. Here I have an F of W now, delta 2 of Z minus W. These are the equations of motion for the new equations of motion for beta 1. Okay? And now I can try to I didn't want to assume that it was a delta function, beta 1. That was a mistake. Sorry, I wanted to write this. My bad. Okay? So, just beta 2 is changing the way the del bar looks like in the transverse directions in this way. Okay? How can I fix this problem? It's pretty easy. I can just write beta 1 as my favorite beta 1. I'm trying to do things perturbatively and really making a hash of it. Forgive me. I should have written something like that. I want a perturbation, which looks like F, and then I'm going to put this. I'm sorry. Instead of deriving it, I'm just going to write the answer, and then we can check that it's right. Okay. I claim that this satisfies these equations, okay? And the way it's working is that, this is Q by del bar. Del bar acting on this produces a delta function. And this cancels this delta function acting on beta 1, acting on this. And I'm just working in the leading order in F, so I can stop here, okay? Now, stare at it for a bit and compare with this, right? This is telling me that to do the calculation, I need to do something which looks like the insertion of O1, the usual insertion of O1, plus a correction whose Z dependence is just 1 over Z minus W. There is an H bar because I forgot to put an H bar. Sorry. And then there is an F, which you would have gotten here too if I integrated this against F, right? I would have gotten an F of W prime. And then there is this bracket, okay? And now this is going to work if you can show that this trace here matches this bracket. So that these brackets correspond to the insertion. See, this is an operator sort of mirrored by this. Well, now we can try to draw pictures. So that this sort of single trace operator looked like a disk with external legs. And then the other also looks like a disk with external legs. We are just computing something like that, okay? And so that there was a choice of which I draw it a little, but it's really the result of computing a disk amplitude on the worksheet with some vertex operator in the middle that tells me which closed string I was coupling to. So it really looks like that. On the other hand, if you look at how this looks like, well, sort of convince yourself that it looks like that. Meaning that this bracket here corresponds to taking a vertex operator and integrating another vertex operator around it, or something like that. And well, you keep staring at it, and you kind of realize that these two are the same in the worksheet theory. So combinatorially, it requires a lot of work to show that these two are the same. And we haven't done it. Well, I mean, you have done it, I think, to fully, right?
Not with the most dramatic variances, but better than
that. No, I'm saying Keju has done it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so Keju has shown that these two match in a paper. And this match is also kind of a form of causal duality in the sense that it's something which follows on some general considerations about disks, which in this particular setting becomes a specific combinatorial calculation. I'm not saying it's an easy calculation either way, it requires some thinking, but there is something universal about this. And you could have done something like this for these two. You would have got, because there is a derivative of delta function, you would have gotten a 1 over z minus w squared too, and a 1 over z minus w term. And this corresponds to the fact that when you do this calculation, now there is a derivative in one of them. So when you contract the derivative with a field, you get a 1 over z minus w squared. But again, the whole match is combinatorially challenging, but should be motivated by worksheet considerations. OK. So all of this is to be done at zero, order zero in the toothed coupling. No back reaction was involved. The back reaction is just what's sourced by this n times a specific bulk field. I mean, I think with Kevin, you looked at the back reaction in one of the lectures. So it just means that in this, when I try to solve these equations, I need to solve them in the back reactor geometry. Or if I want to work in perturbation theory, I just need to add the lambda, you know, lambda times the back reaction and work perturbatively in lambda, order by order. And this should match combinatorially the result of taking more contractions between these disks. Showing the match is much harder. I mean, again, you might need Feynman diagrams in the back. I think so. You checked it at the order lambda, right?
Yeah,
you had a Feynman diagram in the bulk, right? And I think in principle one should be able to check it at all orders with some high power thinking about worksheets. But this is how you match OPEs, as far as I understand. You ask the question, how do I need to renormalize an operator if I deform the theory? And then this matches to the question, how do I need to change the field that asks that question if I should change the background? And on both sides, the reason things sort of match on both sides, had to match on both sides, is that we're talking about Beresteyn anomalies. So this calculation I was doing here in the Carrel algebra is ultimately asking, how do I need to change this operator so that it does not have a Beresteyn anomaly if I deform the theory by this operator? And here I'm asking, how do I need to change a probe field so that it does not have a Beresteyn anomaly in the deformed geometry? And so the fact that the brain can be coupled to the bulk means that BRC anomaly is cancelled by anomaly inflow. So somehow there is a close relation between cancelling anomalies in the bulk and in the on the brain. Again, these are very vague. There are a bit vague words, but ultimately, my impression is just thinking carefully about how BRC anomalies are cancelled in the string field theory, in the string theory of the brain and the bulk implies all of these matches. So somehow the robustness of the fact that the string theory is well defined sort of should end up implying all of these matches in the Tuft expansion. I mean, really, all order in H bar too. And ultimately, this is to do with the fact that, which is the core of the paper that we are finishing up, among other things, that the question, what are the possible BRST anomalies that emerge in a theory when I deform it? It's a fun question in any theory, but in these twisted theories, it's a very powerful question. All of the theory correlation, all of the theories captured by this question. Like, all of the OPEs of a chiral algebra are captured by the question, what BRST anomalies can I encounter if I try to deform this chiral algebra by some, the theory behind the chiral algebra by some operators. And so because the whole chiral algebra is captured by BRST anomalies, this must be true on the holography dual somehow. That's about, it could be a way to guide your matching of the two sides. You know, some quantity on the quantum field theory must match some quantity in the bulk if they are controlling the same anomaly. And then, in a sense, so you have a triangle of things, like you have before back reaction, there must be an anomaly inflow because the brain's coupled to the bulk is sensible. So if I encounter any anomalies on the brain, they must be cancelled by inflow of anomalies in the bulk. And when you sort of back react, this becomes somehow the statement that the back reactor geometry should not be anomalous. And the questions I'm asking, the back reactor geometry should not be anomalous. And comparing these two statements sort of must capture all of the twisted holography because all correlation functions are captured by these anomalies. And I know this got a bit mystical, but next time I hope to sort of repeat these calculations in the back reactor geometry. So show you how in principle you could compute OPEs in at all order in lambda.
Sorry, but when you're talking about anomaly in the bulk, this is gauge symmetry of beta of Beltrami differential, the symmetry of reparametrization.
Yes.
Okay. So you're saying that reparametrization, like on the quantum level, reparametrization anomaly in a bulk should be matched with the anomaly of gauge beta gamma system, which we are trying to deform by some extra operators.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. And I would love to be able to express this sharply. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, it's still, I don't quite have it yet, but I think it's a very important lesson. So I want to give it, even if I don't understand it myself fully.
Reparametrization is of the embedding of the brain, or I understand.
So you have your Kodaira-Spencer theory in the original geometry, which Because somebody is not anomalous. Yes. Then you have the brain. And the system now risks having anomalies. Essentially because the field sourced by the brain might create trouble. But these anomalies should be cancelled by anomalies on the brain.
How is it related with like the
and on both sides, right? The anomalies are sort of power series in N in tooth coupling in H bar. And they should match order by order in this tooth coupling in H bar. So the leading order is just a statement that, right, if I just change my coordinate system locally in the original geometry, the action on the brain should change accordingly. But if I change the local coordinate system, I had to sort of redefine my fields intuitively, right? My axes were the coordinates for the brain in the old coordinate system, and now I'm gonna use a different coordinate system. So my axes will be polynomials of the old axes. And you remember what happened, right? When we were doing polynomial changes in the action in the questions, you have one loop corrections to the change in the action. So if you naively just do the coordinate change, you'll have one loop effects on the brain that can mess you up. I call them one loop effects, but really just, I should really just say one weak contraction effects, which can create trouble. But those ones must basically not be troubles. Instead, they match the non-linearities in the gauge transformations. I should stop here because I'm getting really too fuzzy. But yes, I think it's true that this calculation can be stated just as a statement that the coupling of the brain to the bulk is consistent with coordinate redefinitions, local coordinate redefinitions. As I said, these well-timed differentials are literally changing coordinates in specific ways, right? And we could try to express it more carefully, but they sort of they redefine the A and B coordinates in ways that are controlled by these powers of by this polynomial as a function of Z. Like we could try to, this could be a fun exercise actually. Let's actually find the coordinate change which corresponds to the Beltran differential. I think it's possible. I think essentially what we're doing is, that would be probably a better way to do the to structure the calculation. Or did I lose my chalk? Yes. So I think they correspond to changes like A goes to the BP over Z minus W, and B goes to D AP over Z minus W. I think so. So if you just take this Beltrami differential, and you ask what modifications of the coordinates will correspond to that. And the modification of the coordinates, which goes wrong only at z equal to w, and such that the bar of the change of the modified coordinates has this. I think you can check me that the bar of this new a, so I meant a goes to a plus epsilon, and b goes to b minus epsilon. This, I think you can change that del bar of this new a is just the bracket of the beta of p, del p delta chu z minus w with a and so on. Right, it's obviously true. Del bar will give me delta function. Done. So we're asking, how does the coupling of the brain to the geometry, and more generally, if instead of the delta function I put a general func f, right, I could have written some, you know. So I would have a superposition of things like that, right? Something like an integral of so a plus epsilon, an integral of f of w over z minus w del b of t. Remember, this is a certain one form, 0-1 form, something like that, 1-1 form. You can do this integral. You can probably do better than this, sorry. And now we're asking, you know, now that my brain is in this geometry, sorry, is the action of the brain and the definition of operators affect, how is it affected by this deformation of the geometry? And this dictionary matches with the deformation of the theory by the operator.